Hello, and welcome to another episode, and for that matter, a brand new season of the Inciting Event. I'm your host, Zachary Steele, and on today's show, we're kicking off a series of episodes covering the upcoming play Duality, written and directed by Anthony M. Laura. Over the course of this series, we'll chat with the actors as well as Anthony to discuss the characters, themes, and process of creating a play on stage. Now, for this first episode, along with Anthony, we'll be joined by Caroline Gohn, who stars as Camilla, Olivia Haley Young as Celeste, and Chelsea McLaren as Sadie. Duality will run from December 6th through the 21st at Art New York Theaters. Tickets are now available. All right, let's get this thing going. Hey, everybody, welcome. I am looking forward to talking to you today.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, looking forward to it.
Yes, awesome. And so we're here to talk about Duality, and we're going to break down the characters that you play, and Anthony's here to add his writerly, directorly input as well. And to jump right into it, we're going to start with you, Anthony. Anthony, you write a great deal about mental health, and Camilla is certainly no exception. So what is it about her journey in particular that drew the story out of you?
So in how we've been handling the trilogy, one thing that I've noticed is Camilla is a protagonist who is going through something very dark but has kept her optimism, whereas some of the other protagonists that I've written, Haley and Lindsay, have been a little more shaped by what has happened to them and has really pushed people away. So I was really, really excited, and it was the formation of the Camilla character was to not be as high-spirited as Eloise, but to keep her joy and to see her confidence.
Excellent. Well, Caroline, Olivia, Chelsea, you all three play sisters in Duality. And from your character's point of view, how would you define that sibling relationship? And we're going to start with you, Caroline.
It's a really complicated cocktail, and the cocktail varies slightly from sibling to sibling, but the defining characteristic that emerges for me when I'm feeling into Camilla and her world is this sense of grief and possibility, the sense of yearning for more connection, but not necessarily being able to live in the fullest extent of that connection. That is particularly present for her relationship with Sadie. And it's present in a different way in her relationship with Celeste. When you see them interact, sometimes they're not seeing each other and their words aren't landing with each other. Even if they're in the same room, they're in different worlds. So there's this yearning and there's this desire for connection. And there's this just heart soreness from missed landings that comes through in a lot of the scenes really beautifully.
Olivia, what about you?
I think it's interesting that they're not full sisters, at least from Celeste's perspective. And so I actually have a half sister in real life. And I think, Anthony, I don't know how much experience you have with what it feels like to be a half sibling. Obviously, in real life, my sister and I, we do have a good relationship. But I feel like there's just a natural form of distance that I feel sometimes. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, it's just a true thing, your lives can end up being in different places. It doesn't mean that you don't love each other. I feel like from Celeste's perspective, we start out the play with Celeste and Camilla being in the same place, and she stops by Camilla's home, and like the relationship is established in a way where they do this, well, where like Celeste just comes in and sees Camilla pretty regularly, And I don't know, Anthony, if this is something you intended in your writing, but I find it really interesting when Sadie's character, when Sadie comes in like toward the end of the play and surprises everyone. I hope I'm not giving anything away by saying that. She comes in like really toward the end of the play, hasn't been around. Celeste has a good amount of resentment towards her for that. Camilla is not happy, but Camilla opens up a lot easier. And I feel like from Celeste's perspective, she feels left out pretty quickly. So I feel like there's that feeling of just not being enough in that dynamic, no matter what, even with Sadie having been gone. It's like she comes back, and I, from my perspective as Celeste, I'm like, well, those two are automatically closer to each other than I am to Camilla, even though I see Camilla like every day, every other day, you know?
Kelsey.
So Sadie is very interesting because of how she is perceived by the family, and also how she's kind of perceived by herself as this black sheep who has left dot, 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 and kind of gone, and no one really knows anything about her or her life after she, you know, exits stage left. So there's this huge burden that she carries around. I think even in London, where she lives, you know, there's probably an essence about her of, I don't really know anything about Sadie. She's kind of a mystery. We like her very much, but I don't know much about her. And what's so beautiful about what Anthony wrote when the three of these siblings come back together is how we are all so deeply connected by this circumstance of our family, whether we want to be or not. And so it's just this giant rock that we're all holding, and now we're in the same room holding it together, and we can kind of see how big it is. And with Sadie and Camilla, those two, they are just, they like, my heart just like gets so warm with them, because they are the quintessential like star-crossed familial lovers. You know, they are bound together despite the fact if they're in the same place or not. They're one in a sense. And you feel that as soon as they're in a room together. And then on the flip side of that, you know, with Celeste, they are almost like their magnets are being pulled away from each other constantly, and they just can't see eye to eye, and there's so much that they don't understand, and there's so much that they haven't got to say to each other, and there's just so much, but there's still this like really intense, beautiful yearning to try to see each other. And so it's a really Caroline said, there's this really interesting cocktail, especially with the three of them, but essentially we are bound together by what we've gone through.
Yeah, and kind of sticking with the sibling relationship, sister-their relationship, Anthony, what drove you to write about this particular type of relationship? And then what would your take be on their relationship?
So I grew up raised by four women who were sisters, my aunts, and three of them are mentioned in the play, Stella, Mary, and Julia. And I found their relationship to be very, very interesting growing up. And then as I looked back on it, number one, they were not always the nicest to each other. But they also had this ability to absolutely be screaming at each other at a family dinner and then just pass the gravy. With these three, I think it was really, really interesting for me to explore Sadie being so far removed distance-wise, Camilla and Celeste having this bond, but yet Celeste also going through her own stuff. And I think what we wind up seeing with the three siblings is, as close as they are, they're still not sharing everything, right? And I think some of that is still based on the cycle of how they were raised, which we get a glimpse into with Stella as well. So it's really interesting. This is the most people I've worked with on stage at one time. So usually we have large casts, but we're more like scenes of three people or scenes of four people. So that second act is just consistently eight people on stage, which I'm so excited about.
Just a sidebar, I love that you have, when you bring everybody together, the speed at which some of this dialogue goes is wonderfully paced. And I hope to be able to see it, because I think in person it will be wonderful.
Thank you. I wanted to say one more thing in regards to a bit of what Olivia was saying, and it's actually about kind of arriving at Camilla's house and stuff like this. And something I actually just wrote this line in. I don't think anyone has seen it yet, so you'll hear it for the first time. Is Celeste, and it's revealed to Celeste that Reagan is pregnant by surprise. And she's at Camilla's house while this is happening, and she's very affected. And she just turns to Camilla and is like, "Can you leave? We need the room." And there's this, and I just find that like it doesn't matter. Like, I feel that in my own family. Like, they come to my house and they're like, "Can you step out?"
Mm-hmm. That's special that you brought that up on here. It's the first time I'm hearing of this new addition to the play. So,
well, I want to dive into each of your characters a little more deeply. But before we do that, I would be remiss not to give you the opportunity to share a little bit about them. So we're going to go Camilla, Celeste, Sadie. So we're going to start with you, Caroline, and tell us about your character and why you were drawn to the role.
Camilla is exquisitely complex and heart open and mysterious even to herself at times. And it's a just very alluring character to get to know and to explore. There's a side of her that is extremely clear and simple about what matters to her. Things like hospitality really matter to her. Inclusion really matter to her. You feel that when the characters are in her space and how she reacts to the characters reacting to her in her space. So there's a lot of really great repartee in her house that, to Anthony's point, will bring up people's experiences with their own family dynamics. Desired and undesired, by the way. So just the reality of all of it. What really stands out for me about Camilla, though, is she's this paradox, because she feels everything really, really deeply. And in some ways, she has her heart closed to feeling life at its fullest and to what life can offer. And as I've been exploring her and getting to know her over the past few weeks, and in anticipation of continuing to do that and getting to know her over the next few months, I've been really sitting with, what does it take for a person who feels this much, who has this much commitment to her family and to her environment and to keeping her heart open, to get to this place in her life and to make these kinds of decisions about her life? Because it's not immediately obvious at the surface how you could get to where she is in this play from where she begins. So she's a challenge and a journey, and she is in some ways an island, but really yearning for that connection and that reunion with her family. And there's never a dull moment with Camilla. She has a very vibrant inner life, and it's a joy to be able to participate in that as an actor.
Olivia.
So what I think is really interesting is Anthony wrote this character for me to portray after we met. And that's the first time I've gotten to have the wonderful gift and experience as an actor of getting to play a role that somebody writes for you to play. Like, it's really cool. And it's, I think it's very exciting. What I find really funny is Anthony and I, we worked together very briefly in person, and then I don't know actually like how long, like after we met Anthony, that you started writing the play and like writing this role, or like knowing that you're gonna have me play like it. And we like talked on a month. Oh wow, okay. So the funny thing about this role is, well, obviously we'll all see, everyone here knows Celeste and her energy. She's very, my mom called her a little shit stirrer, which I think is really funny. And it's not, I mean, there are some big challenges to the role, but overall the character herself, like, it's a very easy type for me to play, which I just, and this is why I think this is really funny. You know, Anthony did not know me that well, and that's who he wrote for me to play after knowing me. And she's very special, I think. Yeah, I mean, I think that I just think it's really funny that when I walked into the first day of us doing like a reading over Zoom, and I had like quickly, you know, like a night or two before read the script, and I was like, wow, this is how Anthony sees me. I'm totally kidding. But yeah, she's not that. I mean, I would be lying if I said there weren't a lot of parts of me that did not, like, that were her, you know, like those parts really exist. And that's why I think maybe you wrote it after knowing me for about a month. And she has her soft spots too, obviously, but yeah.
I think what I responded to when I met you was your humor. And Celeste is, every time I write Celeste, I just love her so much, because she is just, she's going through a lot, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think something that always, until this day, clearly, that I admire about Olivia is her ability to not stop when things get overwhelming or whatever that is. And I wanted to do an extreme version of that with Celeste, because Olivia has never raised her voice once to me. So, but I also knew, you know, I directed her in a scene, and I saw that there was a lot there that I think would be fun to explore that humor together.
Yeah. I also have to say, I found it very surprising that people laughed at me. Like, my cast was laughing in rehearsals, because you approach a character, you see yourself, you see the character sees themselves a very certain way. And then I come to rehearsals workshops, and there are these moments that Celeste is taking herself so seriously, and people were like cracking up laughing at me. And I found that surprising.
Can I respond to that? Because I remember having that experience when we did our first table reads, we were on Zoom, and then we were in person workshopping, and the dynamic completely shifted, because now you've got everybody's nervous systems in a room and they're reacting to each other. So the response I experienced in Camilla's body to Celeste was just that. Have you all had this experience of when something's really intense, you just have to laugh because you need to discharge the energy? Like, something's deeply uncomfortable or really awkward or just really intense or sometimes really awful, and you have this really strange human response to laugh. And it's like the only thing your nervous system can do to let the energy move through. That is how interacting with Celeste is. Sometimes it's like receiving a lightning bolt, and you've got to find a way to shake it off. And so the body's response is to just laugh, because you can't even fathom how else you're going to respond in that moment. So she's a really, really entertaining character, and also really sometimes challenging character to be on stage with for that reason.
Yeah.
I was also going to say what I felt in the room, and not speaking as a cast member, was laughing from relatability. Was just, I've been here, and I think a lot of people, you know, Camilla, Celeste, and Sadie are vastly different with how they hold themselves. And I think it's really, really nice to see that, especially on stage at one time. Because, and then when you bring Eloise into the mix, who has a very, very high spirit, and then Stella, who, you know, Stella has a bit, she leans more with Celeste, I think, with how she approaches things. So I think it's really, really interesting.
Excellent. I don't know about you guys, but when I read the script for the first time, I'm not a person who reads scripts and laughs out loud. I was laughing out loud all night.
Oh, absolutely.
Reading the script when I read Eloise. She was so funny.
Yes.
I would agree with that entirely. She is a joy to behold. So, well, I don't want to forget the somewhat forgotten sister of Sadie. So, Chelsea, tell us a little bit about Sadie and what drew you to her.
So, what was the most surprising when I read the script, especially because Anthony and I are new friends, I was like, oh my gosh, Sadie is me. I am Sadie. Amazing. How did that happen? So, you know, I come from a big family, and I was the one who moved to New York City to go pursue my dreams, and they're all still, you know, over there. And so they don't understand me. They're like, I don't get it, but sure, you know, just tell us when you're coming back, because you're coming back, right? You know, so I understood her a lot in that respect. But she is especially fun to play because as I've kind of been getting to know her over the last couple of months, she has imagined returning home a million times, but she never thought it was going to be as bad as it was when she got there. And, you know, it's her realization through the whole family, her interaction with Celeste. Like, she knew, she thought of 100 zingers that Celeste was going to throw at her as soon as she saw her, and it wasn't as good as the one that she got that completely knocked her off her socks. Or looking into Camilla's eyes and realizing, oh my gosh, we're in a state. I need to help. Things are out of hand. What is happening? And so I'm going through all of those realizations with her as I've been reading the script and interacting with everybody in the workshops. And she is someone who is similar to Camilla in that she was pushed to a place that she never thought she would get to. And the only thing she knew to do was to leave, despite everything in her body, knowing that she should stay and that people need her and there's things happening. So, you know, Sadie's push to the brink moment happened much earlier than Camilla's. Camilla's is happening right now, you know, as we're watching the play unfold. But there's like there's a knowing in that, where she's seeing that somebody is being pushed to a certain limit. And she kind of realizes how dire the situation is and is going to do everything in her power to keep everybody where they need to be. And so she has her own, you know, deep, dark secrets and, you know, things that she's going through and things that people don't know, that she's kind of, it's all happening in front of her eyes in real time, which is one of my favorite things about playing her. It's because everything's happening like right then. Pre-existing thought or any kind of agenda from her. She's dealing with what's in front of her really quickly and rising to the occasion and being vulnerable and allowing all of the things to happen to her with grace and doing her best to kind of deal with each person. And it's a really fun character to have to completely unwind in like 40 pages. Yeah.
Well, I want to dig into each of your characters a little bit. Obviously, there's so much in this play that we want to tread carefully with, so we're going to try not to have any spoilers in it. But we'll do our best. We'll do our best. Caroline, we're going to start with you. But when we meet Camilla at the beginning of the play, she is in the process of setting up a party with her family and some friends coming over. We later discover that her motives for the party are related to a big decision that she has found herself needing to make. How do you view her motives here? And is it a cry for attention, or does she hope it goes exactly as planned?
It is definitely the latter from my perspective. Camilla's a planner. She is a meticulous hostess. She is super organized. She wants things to be just so. And this party and her entire set of motives behind it are no different from that. What I find really interesting about the counterpoint with what we were just talking about with Sadie is you were mentioning the immediacy of Sadie's character, right? She arrives, she's an open book, she's reacting to other characters in real time, and there's a lot coming at her in a very short amount of time. Camilla is the polar opposite of that, which I find really beautiful in the writing, which is Camilla's, what you're seeing of Camilla is the tip of the iceberg. There is all kinds of complexity happening underneath the surface going into the play. And you start to reveal and feel into and see a fraction of it as the play continues to move forward. And so there's this beautiful contrast between the sisters on that front, meaning that I think we've all established that, you know, Sadie and Camilla are sort of like quantum entangled. They're basically connected at a soul level, and they have these experiences that mirror each other in their lives, some of which they're not even aware of, which we will find out about in the play. And they are very effectively both the same and wildly different in ways that you experience throughout the play. So in the same way as Sadie's arriving with no agenda, very open, very receptive, she doesn't necessarily have a plan. Camilla's an alpha planner. She's coming into this. She knows exactly what she wants. She does get frustrated when things start to deviate from that, which is also part of the drama of this play. And without delving into any potential spoiler territory, she is someone who is baffled in real time by what life throws her way when she had this very specific perception of what she thought this whole thing was going to be like.
You know, Olivia, we touched on this just a few minutes ago, that there's a bit of a manic energy to Celeste, as if she's teetering on the edge with every single word. When you are preparing for a role like this, what do you draw from to ensure that you capture the essence of what makes Celeste Celeste?
That's a great question. I think I have two things to answer with that. So first of all, my mom, she's understudying in the show, which is really cool, but she's an actress. And when I was like a teenager and I was just starting to learn how to act and explore that world, she would always say this to me, and I've really held on to it, but she said, acting is one of the most embarrassing things you can do in the world. Like, not to be an actor, but like when you're put, like what you put yourself through, like if you think of some characters that you can play, or some, I mean, like we've like in school for acting, like we've all done just some like really embarrassing acting exercises. I can think of a few off the top of my head. And so when, like what I said before about Celeste, of course, there's a lot of her that's already like just comes to me. That's easier for me to play. But the part about playing her that's quite difficult is exactly what you're talking about, like teetering on the edge, having that manic energy. She like has these outbursts where she cries, she yells. The yelling part is actually easier. It's the crying that's really hard. And I think when I was in the workshops and just reading the script over Zoom, I haven't been crying, and I'll get there, but I haven't, because I'm not gonna like push that. And I was, but in the middle of that, I was thinking, this is gonna be hard because I feel like that's not who I am. And then like a few days later, I got into an argument with my boyfriend and I started crying in like 2 seconds from starting the argument. And I was like, wow, I actually, like, there is a whole part of me that easily like starts crying in just in an instant, the way that Celeste does. And so I realized in real life, you don't think about it. It feels easy. But then when I'm in rehearsal, I know my body knows how to do that. But when I'm there, I'm like, I don't feel open in the same way. So then it really goes into doing the correct, for me at least, the correct type of preparation, like outside of the rehearsal room for Celeste, because I'm not gonna walk in and like push myself to cry. That's not it. So I need to really prepare, like create very like strong core memories for her, and both as a person, and then breaking the script down. I mean, this is a slightly technical question, but breaking the script down, like, what is she crying about? Okay, I'm gonna go back and create a very strong memory for myself of that, so then I can trigger myself. Caroline and I have the same teacher, by the way, but I can trigger myself to cry from a real place or react like that, because it is a trigger. So you can't plan a trigger. You can't push a trigger. You have to create a real trigger, so that when you're on stage and you are in that moment where you cry out of nowhere, it's a real trigger. It's not, I'm an actor and I'm supposed to cry because that's the time for me to cry. Like, that's not going to work out. So that's why that's really hard, because when you're creating these memories and these triggers, you have to create things that really speak to you and the character. I've created ones that speak to just the character, but then to me as a person, I don't always touch upon it, or it just doesn't do it for me. So it's like finding organic ways to, as a human being, understand it and then like get in touch with the character from there.
Well, Chelsea, we were talking about this just a moment ago. There's both a literal and figurative distance between Sadie and her sisters. Yet she remains optimistic and hopeful that they can all still be a functioning family. And I'm going to give you a big picture question. What is it, in your opinion, that is about family that makes it so much easier to stay close to friends through all of life's horrors, but not siblings?
I have a lot of opinions about this, so it's a good question.
I have 4 siblings, so I have a lot of opinions about this question too.
I have 3 siblings, so I understand. We understand. Yeah. Well, first, I'll talk about Sadie and then myself, and then we'll go back to Sadie. For Sadie, as much as returning is going to be really difficult and painful for her, there's always been a thought, I believe, for her that she knew she would have to go back and face her demons and be the family member she knows that the rest of the family needs her to be. She's stepped away from her duties out of self-preservation, but I believe that she always knew there was going to be a time where she would have to go back and kind of reemerge in her role that she left. So there's that kind of knowing in Sadie's brain. For me personally, the reason that friends can be so much easier than family when things are flying off the handle is because you can recount a story to a friend and there will be 0 triggers happening. They were not there. They are not, you know, connected to you by blood. they don't have the same hot fire that your family member is going to have. So they can be, friends can be that wonderful solace of listening, you know, that you need when things are going awful. At the same time, I talk about this with my sister that's right after me. We're 2 years apart. So we have this sense of like, we don't know life without each other because I was two when she came. So she's just always been there. And we've talked about, you know, stressful things that have happened in our family. And we both go, can you imagine not having a witness to this? Oh my God, I would feel insane because no one would understand the chaos that just occurred, but you understand it intrinsically. And I'm so happy that I have somebody that has witnessed this with me. So it's a double-edged sword, right? There's that vulnerability of like feelings are going to get hurt. Words are going to really catch fire sometimes, you know, depending on what's going on. But at the same time, there's that, those people that without them, who wouldn't understand what you've just gone through? No one. So it's tough. And, you know, I feel like with Sadie, there's this wise sage version of her inside that's like, you know, you're going to have to go back and, you know, pick up the pieces because they need you. So what I find really admirable about Sadie is she kind of does this quiet work alone by herself where she's trying to become as healed as possible so that she can, you know, be that person for the rest of the family because they've gone through so much and they need somebody who's kind of, you know, if we're just being pragmatic, like gone to therapy and worked on herself and tried to get better and healed that, you know, trauma that's been passed down. And that's kind of the role that she has.
I can relate to that. Caroline, Camilla's past is shrouded by a traumatic event. Obviously, we don't want to spoil what that event is, but how do you believe that it defines Camilla when we meet her?
I love this question. And when I reflect on it, I feel that this event more directed her to really feel more entrenched in some of the ways that she had a tendency to feel entrenched versus define her. Meaning we have scenes in the play where we meet Camilla earlier in her life, prior to this traumatic event. And we still feel and experience a few of the tendencies that the event exacerbates. So we feel her deep sensitivity and the sense of her being in her own mind and in her own deep universe. And in a way, being a little bit isolated from others, being a little bit of an island, being a little bit disconnected as a form of self-protection. So the addition of the trauma into an environment like that has made her more entrenched in her beliefs that it's not safe out there, that no one can really understand me, that I can't feel fully connected, that it hurts to be human. So this is sort of the quintessential question that we experience as humans. How much of what we are is nature versus nurture, and how much of it is a combination of both? And what's beautiful about this play is that it experiences those questions, and it allows the audience to really sit with those questions firsthand with these characters.
All right, Olivia, we're gonna shift to you, and I'm also going to say here that there are a couple lines in this play that just stuck with me that I absolutely love, and I'm insisting that Anthony keep in his edits. And one of them's from Eloise. This one is from Celeste, and it's, "We all need delusions to survive." Now, is this something that you relate to, or do you see this strictly as a Celeste way of seeing life?
Yeah, I think, well, Anthony was right about the comparison between me and Celeste about the fact that we don't stop going. I definitely agree with that. I think that I'm more of an optimist than Celeste. And so I would say what Celeste would call a delusion is what I see as just a reality. I think that's the difference. So I'm definitely the kind of person where I have very big dreams and goals. And I think what defines my success is that I've gotten to a place where I don't even see myself as delusional. I'm just like, yeah, that's going to happen. I'm doing it. And it's been working for me. I think, not to speak poorly on Celeste, but she's in a place in her life where she's, we all go through struggle, but she's struggling. And I think it might be because she sees what she wants to do as a delusion, and then she starts to second guess herself. And it's just a more, maybe a realist way. I feel like she calls herself a realist, she calls herself a realist, but in reality, I think she's not really giving herself a chance to go for what she's doing. So then she ends up in kind of survival mode where, yeah, she keeps going, and that's keeping her from fully sinking, but her life is kind of breaking down around her. So I think that would be my answer to the question. And I'll say, I hope that Celeste gets to a place in her life where she gets out of that point and starts to maybe let herself just go for whatever her dreams are. Because I think she has dreams, but then she calls them delusions. I don't know if Celeste believes that that like your dreams can really turn into a reality the way that, I mean, we've all read like different quotes or heard people say that. I think she's like, yeah, right. Like, great.
Chelsea, Sadie's path takes her abroad to London, which we've referenced in here, and it's a big issue with Camilla and Celeste. She inevitably presents her reasoning behind the move, which comes with the reveal of a secret. Do you think she was right to put such distance between them, or should she have taken a different route? I recognize there's probably a your answer and maybe a Sadie answer involved in this.
Actually, Sadie and I are both aligned on this. So
okay, excellent.
But I'm sure there are lots of people who could tell Sadie that she could have done it a different way. But I think that, see, like I've mentioned earlier, there was no other path for survival for Sadie other than leaving. You know, there was no one, there wasn't the attention that she needed. There wasn't the space to talk. And, you know, I think something that we really see in a quick but powerful scene with Camilla and Sadie is that Camilla really feels like that was a personal affront to her that I left. And what Sadie is desperately trying to explain is that it had nothing to do with anyone. She wasn't trying to hurt anyone. She was just trying to save what little self she had after everything happened. So, you know, I think that for her, there were no other options. That was the only option that she could see. And I'm sure, of course, we could say there were blinders or things that got in her way from seeing that there's other options to the solution, to the problem. But, you know, she did what she had to do. And she knew that she was hurting people, like especially her relationship with Celeste, which already was complicated and didn't get the care and attention from the adults anyway. And, you know, she was left to her own devices and then really didn't have the tools. Sadie didn't have the tools. So she really was just kind of like getting out of a very scary place without any plan and just going, okay, I'm going to figure out how to mend this on my own. Because there's no one here to help me in this place. There's no one here to help me. And that's why I think it's so amazing how all of it kind of shakes out in the end when she returns, because I think she had a lot of negative imaginations about what would happen if she got back. And although it's in a bad place when she gets there, very bad place. She realizes, I think, in real time how she can mend this and make it a safe place for everyone in the family, slowly but surely. You know, it's a beautiful thing to watch.
I regret that we're kind of at the end of our time, because I'm enjoying digging these characters. They're such wonderfully flawed and somewhat broken people trying to fix their lives the best way that they know possible, which is a testament to you, Anthony, and what you've put together yet again with another wonderful play. Before I kick you all out, since Anthony is here, I'm going to have you tell us what are we looking at in terms of when this hits the stage and where it's going to be, and when can people buy tickets, and how excited should we be from like August on?
Sure. So we have tickets going on sale August 1st, and we're going to announce our pre-sale date very soon. And so we're going to have a specific ticketing site, but for right now, people can also go to Duality the Play to follow that progress. And we have, so I believe we did two. So we have 6 more billboards coming out between now and December. So there is a lot to be excited about. We start our table work in about 10 days. And then we take a little breather and come back and start in September. The show will open December 6th and will go until the 21st. There will be 21 performances, including previews. So lots to look forward to.
Excellent.
And there'll be an opening night party too, Anthony.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. That sounds like something that you all get to enjoy, but the rest of us will not. Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
To that. That's why I brought it up.
Well, I guess when I say the rest of us, I'm probably talking about myself in this instance. I don't know that I'll be in the same zip code, but you know, who knows? But I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you all can put together. Anthony, as I said, this is a wonderful script. I've had the opportunity of now meeting not all of, but most all of your cast. And I think you nailed it again, and you all are going to be awesome to see on stage. So as I say, every single time I do any of these, I never wish for somebody to break anything. So I cannot do that, but I do wish you all the best in everything as this process goes forward and as you put on your show. And I look forward to seeing what you do.
Thank you, Zach.
Thank you, Zach.